Jen Zamperali on 2FM with Leia Healthcare. Always a beat ahead. Visit leiahealthcare.ie. Leia Healthcare, looking after you always.
Let's get some magic back into the room because my next guest happened to see a magician performing in his local library when he was 4 years old, and that experience altered the trajectory of his life. His name is Daniel Cremin, and now he specialises in mind reading, magic and mentalism, and he has come all the way up from Cork to be with me in studio in Dublin today. Daniel, it's so great to meet you. Good morning. How
Good
are you?
Good morning. It's fantastic to be here.
Good. I'm delighted to have you. So first of all, right, because I'm fascinated by this stuff, for the uninitiated like me, what is the difference between a mind reader, a mentalist and a magician?
Yeah, so it's kind of a lot of titles that we've made up, basically. But what I would say is a magician is probably the overall umbrella term.
Okay.
And then the different names that you mentioned, like a mentalist or a mind reader, would be similar enough. And they're presentational choices.
Yeah.
So like a magician would use magic and sleight of hand. An illusionist would use magic and big props on a stage.
Okay.
And a mentalist would use magic and psychology.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And that's where I lie. So I kind of would use psychology to get inside your head and make it seem like I know what you're thinking.
So you, at 4 years old, you saw a magician in your local library at work. And when did that inspire you into doing like kind of magic straight away?
It did, it completely. So we were just passing the library with my mother, and I saw there was this poster in the window, and I was like, oh, what's that? And she said, oh, it's for a magic show. So we went inside and I watched it, and I can only remember one trick that actually happened during the show, and that's a secret because I tell it during my show.
Okay.
But I can't remember anything else, but it was just that moment of seeing everyone around fully engaged in something that I was like, that's what I want to do.
Brilliant.
And I came home and my dad gave me a Paul Daniels magic book and said, do you know, that was your Uncle Dave's. He lives in New York and he's a magician too.
You're kidding. So and it was in the family, like.
Yeah, and I never knew it. Like, I was also only four, so I didn't have much time to find out.
Yeah, but you weren't in the family tree at that stage, yeah.
But yeah, so it was weird that there was kind of two magicians in the one family that both came up with it independently of each other.
Yeah, completely.
And then it spiraled from there.
So it sparked something in you and you were going straight away. Did you have to study psychology and human behaviour to master what you do?
Definitely. So, like, my undergraduate is in social science.
Okay.
So kind of when I'm thinking about routines or presentations for my own shows is I look at the different kind of psychological literature or human behavioural studies, and I try and figure out, is there a way that I could present that in a way that's entertaining? So I might look at kind of the work of Robert Cialdini is one psychologist who does a lot about suggestion. And I might look at
It's kind of a magician's name,
It's like Houdini, isn't it? But I might look at like how he uses suggestion and seeing how I can then use that in my shows. Or Paul Ekman does a lot about facial expressions and stuff like that.
It's really interesting. But so I don't want to give away everything about, you know, what you do and how you do it. But can you share a little bit about the process of mind reading?
Definitely. So, the producers actually gave me a deck of cards.
Oh, God.
So, what I'm going to do is I'm going to give them just a little mix, and you're actually going to pick one of them.
Okay.
And I'm going to try and guess what it is while explaining how I'm doing it.
Okay? Perfect. Yeah.
So, I'm just going to like flick like this. Will you just say stop somewhere?
Yeah.
Oh, sorry. Say stop somewhere?
Yeah. Stop.
Okay. Well, you remember whatever that is. I won't look at it. I've closed my eyes, not looking in the monitors. Mm-hmm. Got it?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So now you're just going to keep a complete poker face.
Okay.
But you're going to give it away. Because a lot of people say, oh, can you read my mind? And I don't know what's going on in your head. I can't read your mind.
Okay.
But by asking you certain questions, I can get you to tell me what you're thinking using nonverbal cues. Okay?
This is wild.
So complete poker face. I'm going to break it down into kind of like binary options. So just think whether it's a red card or a black card. Mm-hmm. Okay? Imagine the red cards are over here by my left hand. The right card... Okay, so you looked over to the left for a little longer than you looked to the right. So it was a red card. So it was either a heart or a diamond.
Yes.
So imagine that. Imagine you can see it in front of you and really turn the sharpness up on this image.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, now most people, if they find it easy to turn the sharpness up, they nod straight away. You didn't.
Mm-hmm.
So sharpness would associate with a diamond. You found it hard, so it wasn't a diamond, it was a heart. So it's either a number card, picture card, or an ace. Probably a picture card. Oh, no. Okay, your eyes opened just a little bit more when I said picture card. So it's probably a number card. 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 4, 5, 4. Was your card the four of hearts? Yeah, is that what it was?
Yeah.
So that's how I do it. You break down the questions.
That is
and you try
wild.
And, you try and pull a response out of someone.
Because I was like, oh, keep your bloody face straight.
But the more you try,
but the more you try, the worse it gets.
Yeah, yeah, totally. Yeah.
That is absolutely brilliant. Yeah. Oh my God, it's no, get out, witch. So can you tell us about maybe a memorable experience or a reaction you had from a member of your audience that really stands out to you?
Okay. Do you know what? So as I said, I started magic when I was 4, and then I kind of moved into the kind of psychological stuff when I was 11.
Yeah.
And around the time that I was 14, this is a bit of a background to the story, is I started working with Keith Barry.
Yeah, okay,
so
great.
He kind of became a mentor and a collaborator and is now a great friend.
Yeah.
And I work on his kind of TV shows and stage shows
Brilliant.
And stuff with him. But when I was about 16, I started looking into hypnosis.
Yeah.
And we were up in, I think it was the Olympia. And I was side stage, kind of just preparing stuff, making sure the show was going well.
Uh-huh.
And the whole second half of that show was a hypnosis show. So he'd bring everyone up on stage and he'd be snapping his fingers and they'd just be falling asleep.
Oh my God,
and me as the 16-year-old goes, oh, that's easy. He's just snapping his fingers. not knowing all the work that went in behind it.
Yeah.
So I had a gig the next week and I was doing what was called a pseudo-hypnosis routine. So it's uh-huh. one that allows you to practice hypnosis, but if it doesn't work, you still have other ways of making what you say happen, okay?
Okay.
So it's kind of like a safety net to be able to practice. But I just went, I'm going to snap my fingers and see what happens. So I just went 3, 2, 1 and sleep. And your man's head just dropped right into his lap.
No way.
And I internally freaked out.
But I've killed him.
But tried to keep my cool and said, when you wake up, you're going to jump up onto the bar and think you're a priest. You're going to start saying mass.
Oh my God.
And then I snapped my fingers and he woke up, grabbed the microphone, tied his jacket, went up in the bar, jumped up and started saying mass, giving out invisible Holy Communion.
Stop.
And if anyone wants to see that video, it's up on my Instagram at Daniel_Kremen. Reshared it on my story, but it was a health and safety hazard, which I would never do again.
Oh yeah, yeah,
but
yeah.
It was mad. It was my first time hypnotizing someone and it was just done completely off the cuff. And
it sounds like you were more surprised than anyone.
I was shocked. It was because I kind of got so much into like the, oh yeah, I'm a hypnotist, I can do this. And then I got ahead of myself thinking I could really do it, but I did.
Ever feel like, because if you know that you can do that or you have the skills and the sort of background knowledge that you need to do stuff like that, do you ever apply this in kind of real life, in your day to day life?
There's different things you
can
do.
Get out there getting free coffees and all.
You can get free coffees. You can sometimes get into concerts. There's a thing called black ops hypnosis, which is kind of waking hypnosis. And it's a way of not that I'd ever do anything
not
like this.
Not at all, no.
But you can kind of, if you went up with a ticket for a different concert, and there's different kind of pattern interrupts that you can do. So most of the time, the bouncers or the security aren't looking to talk to you. They're just looking to scan your ticket. So if you ask them a question, that's disrupting their normal
their routine
pattern.
Yeah.
And you say that, and then so you say, oh hey, how are you doing? And then if you turn to the person behind you and you go, oh, do you have your ticket as well? And you hold up your one, which could be for any show. They have their ticket, and then what happens is the eye line shifts from your ticket to their ticket, and you can kind of swoop past them.
Wow.
Not that you'd ever do it, but that is something that you could technically try and apply.
That's mad. It's such a skill. Like I'm fascinated by this, all the background work that goes into it. There's ethical considerations, I guess, like we were talking about. You know, if you're doing kind of, if you have these skills and you have this kind of power, I guess, that where you can manipulate people and stuff like that, there must be audience members that you have that don't want to be involved and want to,
And like, if I have someone up on stage and I'm getting into their head and I'm revealing their thoughts, technically, GDPR should be a huge issue there. But
exactly.
But like on a serious note, in my shows, I want people to come and to be entertained.
Yeah.
And they're not going to be entertained if they're sitting down freaking out that they're going to be up on stage.
For sure.
You know,
yeah.
Like saying that, I do pick people at random.
Okay.
So I throw kind of a crumpled up piece of paper into the audience.
I've seen Darren Brown do that kind of thing. Yeah, just fling it around.
And whoever catches it comes up on stage. But If you catch it and you don't want to come up on stage,
pass it on.
There's enough people around you that do.
Yeah.
So you
can
just give it to someone. You know, I think, like, I talk a lot in the show about influence and suggestion.
Yeah.
But the one decision that everyone genuinely gets to make for themselves is whether or not they come up on stage.
That's interesting.
Because I think I have a moral obligation to to let them do that.
Of course.
But once you're on stage, you're mine.
So you just did that. You did that card trick there with me. It's like, I know it's radio, right? But is it kind of like, are there effective tricks, obviously, that you can do, you know, wherever you are?
There is. There's loads of different genres and subsets of different routines that work in different situations, and try and using them then in the right way. Like, even I was doing a show before, I used to do a thing with sponge balls. So you got these little balls and you can put one in your hand and one in someone else's hand.
Yeah.
And your one can disappear and there can be two in someone else's hand. And it's that kind of stuff that I used to do when I did magic.
Uh-huh.
But I did a gig and I picked someone. I said, so do you want to come up and help? And he goes, oh, no, it's not going to work on me. And I went, why? And he goes, oh, because I'm blind. So I can't see what you're doing.
Oh, that's interesting.
But I still had the sponge balls inside in my case. Uh-huh. So I got him up. So that was a very tactile thing that he could feel happen in his hand. So there's all different alternatives that you can do.
It's brilliant. So the show is called It's All an Act.
Yes.
Does that mean that there's no such thing as magic on any level?
Okay, that's interesting because, so I don't believe in magic or the supernatural or that kind of stuff because I can kind of explain it with what I do.
Sure.
But it's interesting that that's what you took out of the show because the reason it's called It's All an Act has nothing to do with magic.
Yeah.
So the show itself is about me telling my story about seeing that magician in the library.
Yeah.
Wanting to be a magician and then kind of the highs and lows and rejections of an artist trying to make it. And how during COVID I went through a period where I hit a creative block and I felt like I couldn't create. And if I didn't create, I wasn't a magician.
Mm.
And if I wasn't a magician, who was I?
Yeah.
And that's where the idea It's All an Act came from, because I started to feel like, was my life this act of being a magician and I didn't know who I really was.
Oh, that's interesting.
So that's where that
autobiographical
title comes from.
A little bit as well.
It's a story-driven magic show.
Brilliant.
Is what it is, yeah.
You're a young man and you're doing your first kind of big public show, I guess. How far do you want to take it? Do you want to be doing arenas? Do you want to be that kind of thing?
Definitely. I want to take it as far as I can.
Great.
This is the one thing that I'm super comfortable doing. I'm in the zone when I'm doing it.
Yeah.
But saying that, I probably wouldn't like to do arenas.
Okay.
Because I think the type of stuff that I do, the stories that I tell are intimate enough that I wouldn't like to have a huge arena. Like, I'd much prefer to do 7 nights in the Olympia than 1 night in the 3.
I get
you. Know?
Yeah, I get you.
I prefer theatres as a venue.
And
as
the
well,
Olympia
anyway.
Way better suited
it
to
does,
the kind of
yeah.
show yeah, that you would do.
Yeah, but definitely going forward, probably the next goal, if there's anyone listening, is to get on the Late Late Show.
Oh,
so,
listen.
You know, my suit's in the car if you've any openings Friday night.
He has a suit.
He's
Come
around.
On.
I'm ready.
Yeah, he's ready.
But yeah, no, the goal is to take it as far as I can.
Brilliant. Daniel, it's you're clearly very, very talented. So the show is called It's All an Act. You can catch his first ever headline show at the Smurfit Theatre at Dance Cork. Is it Firkin Crane? Is that right?
Dance Cork Firkin Crane.
Dance Cork Firkin Crane, that's right. For one night only.
One night only.
And it is the Saturday, the 14th of October. The tickets are available at dancecorkfirkincrane.ie.
Jen Zamparelli on 2FM with Leia Healthcare. Always a beat ahead. Visit leiahealthcare.ie. Leia Healthcare, looking after you always.